You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe Podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
I definitely think my feet are one of the most important parts of that. So a really good sock and a really good boot is huge to me when I'm out hunting. When my feet get wet and feet aren't comfortable, my hunt isn't as fun.
The guarantees and the way a brand stands behind its product is a huge thing with hunting gear because it's not cheap. And inevitably, when I've bought the cheaper version of something when it came to hunting, within a year or two, I desperately want to swap it out for something better. And I'm happy to spend that money and cry a little bit if I know that the company's going to stand behind it. That's huge.
Hey, all. I'm just going to do a quick run through of the sponsors and partners of the podcast because each of them are mentioned throughout this episode. Because I am a longtime loyal user of each product or service of the sponsors I have on this podcast. As many of you know, that aspect and integrity is very important to me. So a very big thank you to Purina Pro Plan, Boss Shot Shells, Onyx Hunt, Siren USA, and Dakota 283. Patreon members, on Wednesday, December 1st at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, we will have a live webinar with Katie Willis and Emily Spolier to demonstrate different techniques of plucking. Hear why and when they pluck and ask your questions. If you aren't already a Patreon member, go to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe to join for $5. 100% of the new registration fees will be donated to Pheasants Forever in honor of Giving Tuesday today. And because you know how much I love to do giveaways, I'll have some of those available at the end as well. It's that time of year when we are all thinking about Christmas ideas and what would be nice to add to our gear list to enhance next year's hunting season. Since 40% of the listeners of this podcast are men, I wanted to get some input from the guys. So I sit down with my husband, William Bastion, and our good friend Jeff Quigley to discuss the hunting gear that we've put through the test for ourselves, our dogs, and the truck setups that work for each of us. While it only takes a gun, comfy clothes, shoes, and preferably a dog to get out and hunt, we mention items that help make the hunting experience a bit more efficient. I have links to every single item mentioned available in the show notes, as well as on my website, thebirddogbabe.com. All right, let's get after it.
We actually talked about doing this episode. I think it was opening day, was it not? Like
it was
September
the grass
1st?
Opener.
Yeah, we were out just kind of entering the woods there, and I'm like, hey, we should do a deer episode.
not shooting birds.
Yeah, but I like that we're doing this a little bit different because I think all three of us got some new gear pieces this year, and now we've had a couple months to break it in and decide, has that really worked or not? So joining us is our good friend, Jeff Quigley, today. Hey. Thanks for coming, Jeff.
Thank
we
you.
We appreciate
fun
it.
To be here.
Yeah.
Are you starstruck?
No.
Filming next to television star William Bastion.
Yeah,
close personal friend of Kevin Costner.
Yeah, right.
He has way more camera time than I do, that's for sure. Jeff, how long have you been upland hunting?
Upland hunting. My first hunt ever was stocked pheasants in Massachusetts. And then it was about a 5-year gap before I went back.
Okay.
So 2.5-3 years now. And 2 years with my own dog. I've got a 2-year-old poodle pointer out of Cedar Woods down in Boise. And yeah, it's been
awesome
education and a hell of a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And you natural ability tested
Gila
and got a prize
112,
one.
I think.
112.
Yeah. I don't know. Ask Will.
He's a pretty awesome dog. I got to shoot some birds over him last fall. Hopefully again tomorrow.
Yes. So we need to get out.
We will get out tomorrow.
Yeah. Shit.
Yeah. How long have you been big game hunting?
I want to say it's about 7-8 years now at this point. I think that sounds about right.
What made you want to make that transition?
It was a food thing for me. I've got some pretty severe food allergies, so I had to learn to cook. And as soon as that started happening and I did the deep dive into that, then it became interesting to me to connect with food a little bit. And I think I caught my first trout when I was in college and cooked it. And then all of a sudden something switched and it was like, oh, I think I need to go shoot something.
Yeah.
It was a long learning process for me because I didn't grow up around anyone who hunted. I don't think I'd shot a gun until after Hunter Ed. But it's been a lot of fun. It's a hell of a learning curve, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. What has been your favorite upland game bird to hunt so far?
I still love pheasants. They're terrible for the dog, but they're big enough that they feel worth the effort to me, and I do love eating them. Shooting sharptails this year, I was pleasantly surprised how much meat comes off a sharptail.
Right.
And so, you know, those might take over at some point, but we just have easier access to pheasants around here.
Did you prefer the taste of sharptail over pheasant?
A little bit. I think you have to cook them so differently. They're not a great comparison to me. Mm-hmm. I know I'd rather eat a pheasant than a grouse more often than not. Again, more meat for the effort. Will likes busting brush to shoot a bird the size of your hand, and I've never quite understood that. But, you know, to each their own.
And you want me to take you chucker hunting? You think that's...
Oh, no, I've let you know repeatedly that chucker hunting doesn't hold a ton of interest for me. But I want to go do it.
That's a lot of work for a little breath.
Mm-hmm. If I'm going to work that hard, I want to shoot an elk.
Let's get into this episode. I want to kick it off with an important point that to get out there and hunt, it really doesn't take too much. So, you know, a gun, shells, comfortable clothes, comfortable boots, and just get out there and do it. Having a dog is I think a really important and fun addition to a hunt. Bird recovery, mostly the important part, but don't let any of the gear aspects of it hold you back from just getting out there and doing it.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. Better gear just makes it more comfortable. Mm-hmm. That's really all it comes down to. You can do it with the cheapest stuff on the market and you'll be fine. You'll replace it more often. You might be a little less comfortable out there, mm-hmm. but don't let it stop you from doing something.
Yeah.
When we went out last, I forgot my boots and I was hunting in tennis shoes. It worked.
They weren't even tennis shoes. Wasn't it your sandals?
No, they were tennis shoes.
I think that's the first important piece I want to really hit home is don't let that stuff hold you back from just getting out there and doing it. You're going to learn what you want to improve on next time of, oh, if I had more comfortable boots, I wouldn't have these blisters and I would be able to work, you know, walk further. And that's, I think I've been hunting 12, 13 years. And so each year I try to choose one thing I want to improve on because I have a budget that I can't just throw loads of money out there to get the best stuff. It's something I save up for and plan for each year. And you've been hunting for how long?
I don't know, since I was little.
So
for one of my first pheasant hunt when I was probably, I don't know, 13.
And with Jeff, you know, fairly new to it, several years, I'd like that you're going to bring kind of that aspect to it of what you've learned. And gear has changed so much since I started 13 years ago when there wasn't many options at all for women. And now I have, you know, a closet full of several different pants options. That's ridiculous, to be honest. There are a lot of women's options now. Let's start out with pants. What are we doing for pants options? You have going from just wearing jeans to chaps to brush pants to just comfortable canvas type pants. What's kind of your go-to?
I've been wearing those of the Orvis pants lately. Main reason why is this, we've been hunting some wetter areas. I don't like to get wet. It's important. I think it's really important from the waist down is more important than everything else because that's what's hitting the brush and that's what's getting in the cover and that's what's going to get you wet or poked and scratched and whatnot. So I mean, it's all in comfort for me. I need to be dry and comfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm not hunting and that'll keep me out there longer. But if it's cold and I'm wet and it just doesn't make it as fun.
What is it besides keeping you warm and dry?
So these have they're not a pocket, but if I get hot, I can open them up and there's a little mini air conditioner on each side. and also the boot part of it, it's kind of almost like a built-in gaiter. So it has a grippy part that hooks to your boot and can tighten it up. So if snow gets up in there, it's not going to get up over my boot and get my socks wet. Because once your socks are wet, it wicks it right down to your feet, and your feet get wet, and then your boots get wet. And it doesn't matter how waterproof your boots are. So it's important that way to keep, you know, keep my feet dry and clean. So
is that a bit of a Kevlar?
Enough of protection.
Are those reinforced?
Yeah. They're reinforced and they're stretchy and they're fairly lightweight. So I think they're pretty good. And, you know, another thing, you know, Orvis backs up everything. So it's, they've been nice to have.
What's kind of your go-to?
I run two different kinds of pants depending on the situation. If we're going to be going through brush, I'll run the First Light Sawbucks. I think you have a pair over there. That's their like reinforced pants specifically for upland, which is great for going through briars and things like that. That's really, that doesn't get run that often for me. That is, you know, grouse season, things like that. I will put those on. Otherwise, I run the same thing. I run big game hunting, which is actually a set of Prana Stretch Zion pants that are a nylon pant like most of the hunting companies are coming out with right now. They're super breathable. They make them in four or five different kind of earth tone colors. They're a little bit cheaper. And the big thing I like about them is because they're actually sized like real clothing. It's not small, medium, large. It's what's your waist, what's your inseam. They're a little bit better cut. So if you're going to wander out of the field and have to go to dinner, you don't feel like you show up looking like a schlub.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a little more comfortable than most of the hunting pants that I've tried on.
Okay. On the First Light note, I'm just going to grab for the women's mm-hmm. options. We don't have the Sawbuck option. We mm-hmm. have the Obsidian and the Alterus, two different ones. I call these grandma's curtains because they do feel like grandma's curtains. They're a really good pant though. They're super lightweight, but I've worn them in the snow. I've worn them early season and they're great.
Those are the wool ones, right?
The wool ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what the wool is great for. If they get wet, they're going to dry out super quick. They're not going to carry a bunch of scent. So if you wanted to go big game hunting in those, they'd be great.
Right.
Yeah, the flip side is they're not the most durable thing in the world, so I wouldn't take them through a briar patch or something like that.
You and I were just talking right before this that we both had the same experience with these pants where we, you know, ripped the crotch out of them. So there's they're just not good for wear and tear, but they're super good for weather conditions.
It's roughly the same material your socks are made out of. Right. So it's just by its nature not going to be super durable.
Mm-hmm.
But in the right situation, they're my favorite pants.
And then these are similar to, oh, look, I have some hound's tongue right here. So these pants do hold hound's tongue, but these are similar to what you were saying with the mm-hmm. Prana, right?
Yeah, it's exactly the same concept. They're all built. Every brand seems to have some version of this if they're meant for the outdoors now. They're basically mostly nylon.
Mm-hmm.
They're breathable. They dry relatively quick. Well, and they're a little bit cheap in all the hunting specific brands. And it's kind of fun to pack out big game animals with pants designed for yogis. So
for sure. A couple other of the women's options I like. These are the Fall Raven. They have different options as far as weather conditions.
Mm. They're pretty durable. They come with a block of wax, which you can treat them. Mm-hmm. And they're really water repellent. One option in these that I really like is they have built-in gaiters. Mm. It actually has a little hook, like a gator would, to hook on your shoelaces so your pant legs stay down. And then it has these straps to tighten up, just like those Orvis ones, to suck your same thing, is to keep that snow and everything and garbage from coming up into your boot is an option. Mm-hmm. And these have air conditioners.
Yeah, there's no mesh though, so you are wide open.
So
you know,
so you're on the side. You're showing some skin if you have to, but it's nice to have that option, because if you do get hot, it's nice to open it up. And most of these pants are tough and they're durable, but they also have, you know, in that crotch region where you need that flex, it has that nylon stretchable material, which makes it comfortable. And then the articulated knees are big too when they're moving out.
And I said women's, but these come in men's as well.
I like the look of those.
And then these are Proas. Proas came out with a new style this year. Last year they had the Kevlar. Put some in the back. They had the Kevlar over the front. So it's a little bit more thicker this year. I know I had some of the feedback I got from women last year with the Kevlar. They could feel the briars through. And I haven't heard that this year. I do know this does pick up the hound's tongue as well. But these are my most comfortable pants in my closet. They're always my go-to. They have an, around the waist, you have a lot of flexibility. If you want to tighten up, you have the Velcro buckles up here. They're a little bit heavier. I wore last season's pants early season because they're more lightweight. I've been wearing these late season. So Pro's pants are always my go-to.
And I think it's good to point out that it kind of depends on what part of the country you're in. Mm-hmm. I had no need for a lighter, thin pant when we lived in the Midwest because all I was really hitting were really thick cattails, or we were in the grouse woods and running through awful brush. So I do have some options as well. As like I have some chaps and even bibs. I have bibs that come all the way up. These are super, super waterproof.
Those are wick chaps.
These are wicks. They don't make these anymore. Yeah. There's a company, Nightlight. It's a hound company that makes very similar stuff. They're fairly light and they are really waterproof, and they're nothing sticks to them.
When would you wear chaps? When do you opt to wear chaps over your brush pants?
If I know I'm going to be in cattails all day long, I'll probably wear bibs because, you know, cattails come up to your waist and the bibs will come all the way up. So I'm waterproof from here all the way down. If I know I'm going to run through thorns and thick stuff, I'll protect the pants that I have, because even the better brush pants I have still will get you pretty pokey, and I will wear those if I need to. But it adds weight, and sometimes I can sag, and you know, they're not as comfortable. So if I don't have to wear that stuff, I won't.
My other option was just these are Dovetail Workwear. It's a company for women. I've been wearing them this year, and they're comfortable. They're just a
really thick canvas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a thick canvas. You can see it's reinforced over the knee, and there's some flexibility there as well.
They have an articulated knee, and they have a double canvas on the back of your foot where you always step on it, so it's going to wear longer.
They don't advertise the hunting pant, but they work great as one. I know a lot of ladies that are wearing these this year and really like them.
A bib too, right?
They do. Yeah. Yep. And the bibs. And then you're wearing another brand that I wear with the canvas is the Cool, but you actually have the Cool men's pants on, don't you?
Yeah.
Their version of that.
Can you stand up and move?
It's just a thin nylon pants.
And you have the side pockets for ventilation on those.
They have, it's actually a pocket, but it actually has a backside ventilation. So if I do want to open up my sides, I can get some extra air in there.
Perfect. And we were just talking about the built-in gaiters on the Fall Raven. But here's just a pair of gaiters. Like Jeff, you were saying earlier, with some of the boot companies, if you buy a pair of boots, sometimes they'll give you a pair of gaiters. I think I got my pair just $10 off of Amazon. So I'll throw a link up on there, but they're nice to have when it's, whether it's snow on the ground or a wet morning, to have on and then be able to take off, throw in your vest mid-afternoon when it starts to dry up.
It's basically to keep your feet dry. Yep. I mean, it's going to keep, like, these are waterproof, but even just an extra layer over top of your pants connected to the bottom of your boot is going to keep everything out of there. So that's mainly what a gaiter is really for. Extra from your calf down is where you're going to get stuff up in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. With the gaiters, if you can, wear your hunting boots in and try them on in the store, because whatever their sizing guidelines are, they never seem to fit for me according to what they're supposed to.
Yeah, it's important to see how those are going to fit over the actual hunting boots that you wear. You know, they all have guidelines, but it just never seems to quite fit the way they say it's going to.
Okay.
So, but other than that, gaiters are gaiters. Mm-hmm. They're a great piece of gear, but you don't have to spend a ridiculous amount of money on them.
Upper body, shirts, jackets. We can maybe talk a little bit about blaze orange here, because it's in Montana, it's not required to wear blaze orange. Some states it is required. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know about you, Jeff, but we usually wear a piece of blaze orange.
Yeah, I try to either have a hat on or, you know, have something in my shirt. My vest that we'll talk about later has some orange on it. I typically am hunting in areas that I'm pretty confident there's no one else around. I don't hunt, you know, a lot of BMAs that are going to have other guys in them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I've got a Patagonia puffy that sometimes if it's real cold, I'll put that on. That's blaze orange. Otherwise, honestly, I'm mostly hunting in like a t-shirt and flannel. Mm-hmm. I get pretty warm. You know, big game hunting, I believe really strongly in the layering system because it's a lot of hurry up, hike up that giant hill, and then sit down and try not to be so sweated up that you're freezing cold in the wind. You know, I talk about it with Will all the time. In upland hunting, we kind of put it in second or third gear and you just stay there all day. You're moving all day long at about the same pace. So 5 minutes after I leave the truck, I kind of know what my layering needs to be like. And if I put too much on, I'm going to sweat through it. If I don't wear enough, I'm freezing. So it's usually a t-shirt and a flannel of some sort. And I don't care if it's a hunting brand or not. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it needs to be something I'm not afraid to beat up a little bit.
Yeah.
If I'm hunting by myself, I don't really worry about blaze orange because mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about anybody else. But if I'm out with people or a party, I'll really try to make sure I'm visible. I have two options over there underneath there that I really like. Other companies make them, but they're a dry release, kind of really thin, but they keep you warm as well. And they have a little hood on them. So this is my blaze orange option. Orvis makes this, but Free Fly makes one and Duck Camp makes one, but they're light and they keep me super warm. And it's the exact same thing in camo, but I really wear these a lot. Mm-hmm. And then if I get extra cold, I'll just throw on a vest to keep my core warm. And then the vest is small enough that I can take off and roll up and put right in my pack. I got two straps that hang off the back of my mm-hmm. pack and I can just roll it up and cinch it up if I don't need it. But that's usually pretty much the only thing I run when I'm out hunting. So those kind of shirts, is dry leaf shirts, and then a vest. You know, I'm moving all the time. I tend to stay warm, even in the snow.
If you leave the truck warm, you're probably overdressed, in my experience, because about point. 5 minutes later, you're going to be miserable and sweated.
Right.
And once you get sweaty, it's hard to dry off. You're going to continue to move. And if the wind picks up at all, it gets to be a pretty miserable day.
Yeah. That's a good point. When you're getting your dog situated and you're getting kind of ready to go out in the field, usually when you're a tad bit cold, you're perfect. Yeah. Because once you start walking and moving, you'll be perfect at that point.
And I can kind of mirror what you say. I have the dry release as well. Sometimes we come out, we have matchy-matchy. And
all the time.
And so one of us changes sometimes.
Yeah.
but I do like wearing a puffy vest over top of it, usually for early morning. Now that we're into that November, December, January time. And that I have one from Eddie Bauer. I have one from Proas, and just roll it. They're really like the down feathers. So they're super lightweight. They roll up really nice just to be able to tack onto that Molly system on the vest.
They
so.
pack away really well.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't think I've ever worn a jacket out hunting. Have you guys? I have a couple, but
I do have one, but that's usually like when it's, if I want to go out and hunt in a blizzard. And
I was going to say last October, we had a couple of weekends that it was real cold and windy and I threw one on.
Yeah.
But it's pretty rare.
That you kind of need a good windbreak. Yeah.
That's what it's about for me. It's not about the warmth. It's about the windbreak.
Or if you're in an area where you want to maybe do a little duck hunting as well, you need to stop and sit for a while. Then
that is something worth keeping in mind. Like we hunt up on the reservation a lot, and there's a lot of these little water holes, and we'll jump shoot ducks. And occasionally if they're flying, we'll sit down. I do like to carry a puffy that is camouflage in my bag if I think there's any chance that's going to happen. Something that's got a hood on it that I can just throw up.
That's what we talked about last time. I wore that blaze orange
Orvis
thing. We're like, well, I'm sticking out like sore thumb. Yep. Next time we plan to do this, I'm going to wear my camel one so I can strip off my orange and sit in the cattails and throw the hood over my head and be good. But it depends on, you know, game planning beforehand helps.
Yeah.
Let's hop into, since we're still in upper body, let's go to Vess. This has been
we're all running the same exact thing.
We are now. Yeah. Yeah, you had started when you started hunting. Well, I should say rough grouse hunting.
Well, I had just a regular vest made by that Wick company. It was canvas and orange and just a regular vest. Then I finally splurged into my first strap vest and I went with a Wingworks. This is when Wingworks was really starting. So I have one of their very first ones, which I think they've made many different changes since then. But man, that vest really kind of started the strap vest kind of scene 20 some years old, and it still works as great. But I ended up moving to a lighter weight, more, it's just a new and improved lighter and more comfortable vest now. Strap, I stayed with the strap vest because it, you know, when we go out hunting, I'm out all day and I want to pack some food, I want plenty of water for my dogs. So I think we're all running the same vest now. It's the Final Rise vest. So I've really liked that vest. The shoulder straps are not puffy and big. I mean, that's huge. A lot of vests out there, like, they have that thick padded shoulder straps, which really just hinders your shot and your mount and everything. So, and if you have a good strap vest with a good belt, that's, you don't even, I can take my straps off my shoulders and my vest stays exactly where it's supposed to be because my waist belt is so not, is just how it's supposed to be. It's fit and all my weight sits on my hips.
That's really what that vest is all about. It's about the waist belt. And I think Matt will say, like, he based it off big game waist belts. And that was the first thing I noticed when I picked it up, was it never made sense to me. I had a Filson vest for a while. I had a couple of those jackets with the built-in game pouches. They were miserable to carry water with all day for the dog. They were miserable once they got heavy because all of the weight's on your shoulders. The couple of vests that I had tried on before the Final Rise, I didn't understand how I could carry 60, 70 pounds packing out a big game animal and not be as miserable as I was with three ducks in the back of my vest. So now I can carry plenty of water for the dog. For me, you know, when that vest is weighted, it's the most comfortable thing out there that I've tried on personally. You've got one over there.
Nice. I do. Show people.
So you could, I mean, it carries 2 32-ounce bottles of water, and it also is adaptable for a hydration bladder if you're into that.
But when you don't put a big patch over it, you get advantages of a really nice big Molly system.
Yeah, I think Will and I are both running their extra pouch.
We have
on
an extra
back for
pouch
first aid
that I connect here, and I'll keep my first aid and everything that I need in there. My license, everything gets put in there, and tweezers, and zip ties, and everything that, you know, is crucial for an emergency, I'll keep in there.
It's something that I do, which you don't do. I really like to put a water bladder in here. So I have it connect. I will connect the water bladder up here. And then you have earlier versions. You don't have this, right?
I do have that. Oh. But mine's not compartmented.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So mine's just one big pouch.
So I sit my water bladder in here. And then I also have my hunting licenses laminated sitting in this pocket as well. Is that dorky?
You're super prepared. I love it.
Just a case. You know.
Well, what's cool?
I just have to reprint mine 6 times a year since we went to that paper system.
Yeah. Well, come over. I'll laminate
them. Now you're allowed to carry them on your phone.
Yeah.
The license.
You're right. Unless it's, but what if your phone dies?
Yeah. No.
Right?
Wow.
What I like
I'm
about,
prepared enough. That doesn't happen. Okay.
What I like about this vest is it's got pockets all in the right areas. It's got plenty of storage. It's got Molly system all the way around. So if you ever wanted to add anything, it's huge.
So let's talk about this a little bit.
You put it up here.
The lumbar support. Because this is, I think, pretty unique, isn't it? I don't know if any other companies have it.
Admittedly, there's a few companies that have made new strap vests over the last few years, and this is the only one of the new generation that I've put on, but
okay. It
was definitely noticeable compared to any of the old ones.
It's really comfortable.
Yeah.
This, I'm just going to say, especially early season, I was sweating.
It was warm, yeah.
I was sweating like a horse wearing this thing, like just in that spot, right in the middle of my back. So that's the only thing. I definitely did. I noticed my back wasn't a sore like I've had previously with others, but this did make me pretty hot.
Yeah, it has to be tight to keep the weight on your hips. Yeah. And it's got, I don't know if you can see that, but you see that different color. This actually is like kind of rubberized and it really sticks. The same thing on the shoulder straps, so they don't move around. It's actually keeps it right where it's supposed to be.
And I like these little loops here too.
Yeah.
You know, for my water bladder, I put my straw through here, and then I also connect my Garmin unit. I connect that in there as well.
Yeah. It also has D-rings down here. You can throw it in your pocket if you want.
And that was my one criticism of this vest, was I really didn't think there was a great place to attach a GPS or a collar control unit, mm-hmm. that it wasn't kind of swinging around in the field. But I know they have come out with some pouches that attach to those loops on the front.
Oh, really?
And
okay.
You cinch them in. You're not going to be able to look at your Alpha all the time, but you can pull it out, and it at least keeps it stationary. I don't know if that's the big game hunting thing in me. Like, I don't like things dangling, and it just, mm-hmm. it feels like it gets caught. It's put a couple of dings in my shotgun when I'm moving things around because the controller slams into the wood or whatever. It just, but I know they've added those, and I can't wait to add one next season to it and see how
it feels. It comes down to holsters. I mean, there's a lot of different holsters out there. I think most of them can hook into anywhere.
Yep.
I think Pike Gear makes a plastic molded one. Mm-hmm. That you can slip your Garmin in and pull it out so it stays stationary, and then it has a safety clip on it as well. I made my own out of leather, mm-hmm. and there's leather company like Saddle Guy makes great ones. Mm-hmm. They make leather ones that hook on in a couple different ways, and you could probably have it strapped onto your vest too. But
the vest thing has been a nemesis for me for years. I started out with a regular vest, not a strap vest, so just a...
I think you've started with like a She Safari or...
Something like that, yeah, like She Safari, I don't know. But there was, the thing with those, it's nice, but there's nowhere to put water unless you put it in that mm-hmm. back pouch. And going to a strap vest, I did start maybe 5 years ago, started with my first strap vest, and I've gone through, this is my fourth one in 5 years. It's that bad. So they didn't fit. The one I ran last year, after my first weekend out, I actually, you bought me some Final Rise straps that I replaced on that previous vest because they were pretty thick. And on that first weekend out, the padding went right over the pocket. So when I was shooting, I couldn't even get my gun shoulder fast enough, and I had bruises all over my arm.
I think she was hitting the thing that was falling off.
Yeah.
She'd have a huge bruise on her bicep.
I forgot about that. Yeah. That made a big difference for you.
It did. Yeah. And then the pockets on that one, like they had snaps, and those snaps actually broke off. It had a lot of water capacity, though. I loved the water that I could carry in that vest. But yeah, it just didn't hold up. And I think it's important to say too, a lot of these gear, if you're only going out a couple of weekends a season, you don't have to, you know, maybe get something like this that's going to hold up
for sure
a long time.
Yeah.
And you can get something like I ran last year that might hold up for a season or two, where it wore out for me really quickly though.
I think the other value to the strap vest thing, sort of to your point, is the versatility of it. I like that my vest doesn't insulate me in any way, shape, or form. I rely on my clothes to do that. My first vest I had was like a Browning jacket that I got at Bass Pro Shop that had the integrated bird bag. That's great if it was the right weather for me to want to carry that around.
Right.
I had the Filson Pro Guide vest for a while, and I love that thing, but a lot of time that was too hot for me too. Mm. So stripping the bird carrying and the water carrying and the shell carrying down to its barest form has really been nice for me. I don't rely on that for any kind of warmth or anything. Maybe it's too expensive if you're going out two times a year and you know what kind of conditions you go out in every year. Mm-hmm. Maybe a jacket makes more sense. I don't know.
And we haven't tried a lot of the other vests on the market.
No.
You know, the Chief Upland, ones. I hear great things about them. Hunt Ready, great things about them. So this isn't going to be a review of everything that's out there. This is just what we're using and what works for us. So
yeah, I think there were a lot of them that came on the market with that same kind of philosophy about we're going to improve the waist belt. And this is the one that I think Will bought the first one out of the mm-hmm. three of us. And once we all tried it, it was like, well, I don't need to buy four and try to decide which one.
Yep.
What I like about Final Rise too is it comes with everything on it. You mm-hmm. get water bottles, you get, you know, your shell pouches, you, that stuff's on it already when you buy the vest. It's not something you have to add in. You don't have to buy water bottles to add in. You don't have to buy water holsters mm-hmm. and stuff like that. You know, some of the companies out there those are all add-ons, which is, you know, it's expensive enough to have to do a bunch of add-ons. I mean, sure, Final Rise has some add-ons too, but everything you really need comes with the initial vest purchase.
Water is important. I've seen too many vests that don't have water carriage at all. They're even strap vests that have nothing for water. So that's mind blowing to me.
Yeah.
Because your dogs need water.
Water and secure water holders are great. Mm-hmm. I have a story. I took a guy out trucker hunting, and I gave him some water bottles to put in vests. And every time he went up on the mountain, he'd lose one. And he felt really bad at the end of the trip that he had to get. Actually, he sent me like eight new water bottles because he'd like lost like four on our trip. But his vest just wasn't working right. So, I mean, it's important, you know, and when you're trucker hunting, you're out all day. You need that water. I mean, your dog needs water. There's no water up there typically. So if there's no snow on the ground.
Let's move to socks so I can get these stinky smelly man socks out of my face.
Hey, they're clean.
Okay. So, and socks haven't been something that I've put a ton of thought into until this year when I've kind of learned from your experience. So why don't you take it away on the sock topic?
All right. I'm a firm believer in taking care of your feet because you're on them all day. It's important to keep them dry and comfortable. I found these merino wool socks are really nice. My feet run really hot the way it is. So my wife always complains about my stinky feet. So these really keep that smell down, keeps the wicks, the moisture right out of my foot, and keeps my feet right at the temperature that I really want. I run a Darn Tough, they're called. And the reason why I went with Darn Tough is they guarantee them forever, you know, as long as you don't lose them. So I'll wear a pair out a year or 2 years. I'll put a hole in the bottom of them. All you got to do is get online, type it in, say what's wrong, what sock I have, and I send them back and they give me a code and I just order a brand new pair off the website and they come back in the mail. So these have been really a game changer for me for that fact. And I just starting to use them for everything now. But I really like a good sock in my boot.
And you're saying they're like $20, but when you replace them, your shipping is...
Yeah. Darn Tough has a bunch of different thicknesses. So you can get really thick ones and you can get thinner ones and you can get really thin ones. But the initial purchase is around $20 to $25 for a pair. And then if you have to return them, it's like $4 to ship back. So there's a little cost in shipping them back, but not much. But to just know that I have a good sock that I can basically send back if I put a hole in them, that helps with that initial purchase.
And I found that cheap socks or improper socks are a major reason for blisters as well.
Yeah, if your feet get wet, they're more prone to blistering.
Yep.
That's the big problem.
Yep, and I haven't had blisters, actually. Not that I'm saying buy these socks, you don't get blisters, because that's, I don't know. But I haven't had blisters since I've had these socks, and I'm super prone to blisters.
Yeah,
I definitely think my feet are one of the most important parts of that. So a really good sock and a really good boot is huge to me when I'm out hunting, because it keeps me... If any thorns and stuff that poke me don't seem to bother me, but when my feet get wet and feet aren't comfortable, and my hunt isn't as fun.
Yeah.
Anything different with you, Jeff, on socks?
No, I mean, Will actually turned me on to Darn Tough last year, this year, I can't remember. I've been using merino wool forever, and I really haven't heard a compelling case to use any other material. So then you add on their warranty to it. And it was kind of a no-brainer for me because I do tear into them pretty well. At the end of every season, I usually have to buy another pair of socks or two. Mm-hmm. So these became kind of a no-brainer for me.
How many pairs of socks will you guys have that you kind of rotate around in a season?
The lowest weight version that I'm going to wear the most often, I'll have two or three pairs. And then I will usually have one pair of whatever other weights are available for those brands, depending on how cold it is and, you know, what's going on. If I'm going, you know, when we hunted moose in Alaska a couple of years ago, it was two pairs of socks so that I could rotate them out every day. It was really nice to put on a dry pair of socks at the end of the day and get into your sleeping bag, hang up the wool ones. They dry pretty quick overnight, so they're usually good to go by the next day. And constantly kind of swapping between two pairs is kind of the bare minimum for me.
And they're merino wool, so they don't really stink too bad. I think I have like six pair now, and I like to keep like amount like a week's pack a week with, and I'm good for whatever. And if I ever need a pair to switch out, if I get wet, or I have plenty to switch out.
There's other good sock brands too. I've heard good things about, I think, Smart Wool.
Yeah, all the merino wool brands that I've tried are good. The only reason I switched to the Darn Tough was, wait, I can send them in when I put a hole in them.
That guarantees
them. That's huge. And and I think that's a big thing we've talked about a lot, and we'll get into it with boots certainly here, is the guarantees and the way a brand stands behind its product is a huge thing with hunting gear, because it's not cheap. And inevitably, when I've bought the cheaper version of something when it came to hunting, within a year or two, I desperately want to swap it out for something better. And I'm happy to spend that money and cry a little bit if I know that the company's going to stand behind it. That's huge. Mm-hmm. I bought the new gun this year. We'll talk about it. That was a big deal for me with boots. The ability. Well, okay. So let's get into it.
Yeah.
Because I do feel pretty strongly about boots. As someone who's built kind of like a hobbit, I have trouble finding boots that really fit. And one of the keys to it, I think, you've got to go somewhere where someone is going to let you try on those boots, put some miles on them, and bring them back if they don't work for you, because you cannot assess how a boot's going to fit you in the store. I don't care if they've got a little fake rock there for you to stand on. It doesn't matter until you've broken them in properly and really put them through their paces. And so I'm a huge advocate. Every new hunter who comes to me and asks me to help them kind of gear up or go hunting, first thing I tell them to do is go buy an REI membership. Because 95 to 98% of people are going to be able to find a boot that works for whatever it is they're doing there. If you have to go through six pairs, they will let you bring them back at the end of the season if they don't work for you. Mm-hmm. And I swear to you, I've tried on pretty much every boot that they carry that was suitable for mountaineering and carrying heavy weight. And eventually I ended up deciding there wasn't anything there that worked for me. Mm-hmm. But the ability to do that for six seasons, literally at the end of every season, come back and go, no, they were still chewing up my feet. Is incredibly valuable. This year I bought a new pair of Kenitrex that cost so much money. It was a little bit tough to stomach. But the thing that made it comfortable for me to do it was they opened the new Shields in town. And when I talked to Shields, they said, wear them through your elk season. If they don't fit, bring them back and we'll find you something else.
Nice.
When companies are willing to do that, that's everything, especially with stuff that you're only going to discover through trial and error. Those Kenitrex, I'm madly in love with them right now. They've got me through the season.
How long have you had them?
4 months now.
Okay.
They took me through all of elk season and deer season, and I love them, but I hesitate to even recommend specific brands because people's feet are all so different.
Right.
REI carries great brands that mountaineers and backpackers have been using forever. They're going to be a little bit cheaper than hunting specific brands typically. So if you can find something that fits you there, great. If you can't, Kenitrex are wonderful. I have been shocked at how good they are at keeping water out. That's the big thing for me is boots. You need to take time and you need to be able to put in miles to decide if they mm-hmm. fit. And if whoever you're buying them from won't let you do that, run far away, go somewhere else.
And most of those good boots are stiffer. And mm-hmm. when you try them on for the first time, they're like, these are very uncomfortable. But once they break in, the soles like fit to your feet and they mold your feet, and it's amazing how comfortable they are once they're broken, but it takes a good while to break them in.
I think I said before, like if you try them on the store and they feel really good and comfortable, they're not gonna be good.
They're house shoe at that point.
Yeah,
it's like leaving the truck cold. It's not about how comfortable it is when you're inactive.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what it's going to do in the field, because your boots will ruin your hunt faster than anything else out there. I know a lot of guys who take brand new boots on 5-6 day backcountry hunts, and by day two they're miserable and they don't want to get out of the tent.
Mm-hmm.
Take your time with them, wear them out, and make sure you can take them back if they don't work for you, mm-hmm. because you're investing a lot of money in your boots and a lot of time.
And I think we're all running.
We are this year,
at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're all running different models. I run, it's the Mountain Extreme. I think it is. I run the uninsulated version. We've talked about that a little mm-hmm. bit, because I think we all feel like the insulated boots sweat up your feet. They end up getting colder anyway. You become more prone to blisters. I'd rather add the insulation through socks than have it in the boots. If I'm going to be moving around now. It's a little different if it's, I'm going to wear it to a duck blind and have to sit there. An insulated boot would be really nice. But for hiking around and upland hunting, wear more socks if that's what you need.
On a hunt I just went on the other day, I walked through a creek because there was no other way to go. And I mean, I was standing, it was up to the top of my boot and my feet didn't get wet at all.
Yeah.
So that was really cool because the pair I was wearing last year, I had wet feet just right away.
Yeah, but those Kennetrex, it feels like you kind of have to stand in that water for a little while that's over your boot. But if you are moving through the creek, because I definitely was up to like knee deep last week when I was out whitetail hunting crossing a creek, and I was shot. I mean, my pants were soaked, but my boots and my socks stayed dry. Wow. I was shot. I don't know what they're doing. It might be voodoo. Right. It's one of those things you go, why doesn't every boot work this way? So if you've got the money, I think they're great if they fit your feet.
I think it comes down to, when you're talking about waterproof, is finding a company that actually has a full waterproof sock built into the shoe. A lot of companies will say they're Gore-Tex, but they're sold Gore-Tex lining, which means there's stitching. They're stitching together Gore-Tex, which water's going to get into the stitching. Yeah. So a lot of the really good companies are, it's like a full sock built into the boot. So you're really, it's like wearing a wader sock. You can stand in the water with them. And I have stood in the water with mine for a long time just to see if I would get wet. And I've had mine for 4 years now and they're still strong. That's the longest I've ever had a boot. I've usually worn out boots in a year, year and a half. I run the Kennetrex as well, but I don't have the high ones. I run the hard Scrabbles, I think they're called. They're ankle ones, but it is a mountaineering boot. The soles are stiff. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel a need to get something like that, but now that we're out in the West where I'm climbing up, really makes a difference even in walking because the soles are harder and it allows me to walk uphill a lot easier than in the past. But I used to run Keens and Danners and stuff and they work fine for that. But I did find myself wearing something like that out more. And the Kennetrex actually have a rubber do you have a pair over there?
Oh yeah.
Has a rubber, I think they're right over there. Has a rubber sealing over the top of the leather. So they're a little dirty, sorry guys. But the sole's here, and then it has like a rubber that comes all the way up for extra, and it goes all the way around the boot just for longer lasting. I think my soles are going to wear out before the actual boot does. There are some wear on the leather, but you have to treat them. If you know you're spending, I don't know, $400, $500 on a pair of boots, you know, I try to treat them with the wax that comes with them, the beeswax or whatever, 2-3 times a year if I can, or when I remember. Cleaning them up and just waxing them down will really make these things last. So if you're buying a cheaper boot, you know, if you have to buy one every single year, I mean, like I said, I've had this for 4 years and they're still running strong. You know, if I would have bought a $120 pair of boot each year for 4 years, I'd already be paying more than what I paid for this. So like what he says, cry once, you know, and in the end, it's really the same price. You're just divvying out the cash forward. And I've tried Irish Setters and Danners and Cabela Pronghorns and all kinds of different kinds of boots in the past.
I just want to mention one of my other go-to boots. These are, I think I've been wearing these for 10 years. 10 years? You think they're,
they're
at least
old.
10, right? These are Dewberry, and I'm wearing out the stitching in them. But I wear these randomly while I'm hunting. They're a great boot to, I wear them to church. I wear them horseback riding. I went through ice when I was hunting in these last year, and I didn't get wet at all. And that's all the way up to almost my knee. So they're super comfortable. I really like the Dewberries.
This is just another
Heavier boot.
It's just another company that, you know, has a full Gore-Tex sock. Mm-hmm. So their full Gore-Tex was all the way to the top. So that's something to when you're doing your research on your boots, try to find a company that, you know, has a full Gore-Tex sock. Most of them aren't. I mean, there's.
Yeah, they're Gore-Tex like paneling.
Yeah, if they're paneled or sewed up, then they're probably not going to. I would call them water resistant. I don't care if they say Gore-Tex on the side. If they're stitched up, they're water resistant.
Let's go to gloves. We've got gloves right in front of us. I get cold hands.
All the gloves.
We have lots of gloves.
Yeah.
I get cold hands really easily. So, and I don't like anything on my trigger finger at all. So this has kind of been something I put together as what works for me. Is these are called glove liners. Pros makes them. These are First Light. There's a lot of great, they're really lightweight merino wool. So I wear these glove liners and then these fingerless, are they?
They're the Talos gloves.
Talos. What is it?
Talos?
Talos gloves. They're fingerless and
they're merino wool as well, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'll wear the glove liner and I'll put these right over top of it. And sometimes actually I'm missing the right-handed one because I don't even wear the fingerless. I just wear this on my shooting hand. So, and this is good enough for me.
But, I'm a kind of person that doesn't like to wear gloves at all unless I don't have to. I do have a pair of the fingerless ones, which I don't wear that often. But when it gets really cold out, I'll have to wear some. I like these. I don't even know what they're called. But they First Light makes them. They're leather.
That's the hybrid shooting glove or something like that.
They have a little bit of padding here for if you're, you know, banging yourself when you're trucker hunting. But it's merino wool front. And it's got leather reinforced. I like my gloves really tight because I don't like bagginess when I'm trigger fingering. But I tend to not wear gloves if I don't have to.
And those work with your cell phone, you were saying, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because
yes.
That's another big reason I do the fingerless glove is when you're looking at Onyx or things like that. I just don't want to take my glove off all day.
Right.
Or even some of the units now are touchscreen stuff, so you need to be able to use that, but instead of taking your glove off all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I swear by those fingerless ones. These are 3 years old. They're probably about ready to be swapped out, but they're about $25. And that's what I wear 90% of the time when I'm upland hunting. If I need a little wind protection or it gets a little bit cold, I've really come to like these Geyer Kangaroo leather gloves. They're just a little bit warmer. They're not lined, but it does a little bit to cut through the wind and things like that. There's a reinforced patch in the bottom. I think they call these their driving gloves. They make roping gloves and stuff like that too if you need something a little bit thicker.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been really happy with these so far.
Will you wear that on your shooting hand?
I will, yeah. Okay. That's the thing I liked about the Kangaroo. It shrunk a little bit on my hand after use and it almost feels like there's nothing there, but I'm the exact same way. I can't handle having anything between my finger and the trigger. When I'm big game hunting, I can wear bigger gloves, partly because we're sitting for so long, you just have to have them.
Okay.
But that glove will always come off before I pull the trigger on something. When we're shotgunning, I just want the minimal amount. If it gets really cold, I'd rather have to put a hand in a pocket and carry the gun with the other hand and be a little bit slower on the draw than to have something between my hands and the trigger.
Another thing is too, is not to have a high glove. I run a watch, so I can't have everything covering up the watch because I tend to put my unit in my vest. So I don't use my unit as much. I use the watch more than anything. So having a glove that sits a little lower in that blocking off, because I don't want to have to dig for my watch, is important for me too.
What about glasses? Do you guys wear sunglasses, shooting glasses?
No, probably I should. Come home snowblind. No, it's an invitation to lose them for me. I've not found the need. I wear them when we're at the range, but I've never worn them out hunting.
And what about hearing protection?
I should.
Yeah.
I should, but I haven't. To be totally honest with you, I'm ready to invest in like a really nice set. The problem is all the electronic like Hearing Pro that I've heard people use, nobody is in love with their pair yet.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, well, you know, the bird flushed behind me and I heard it over to the right side. And it feels like it's just a little bit too soon in the development of those products. I'm hoping they come along. I'm just not ready to pull the trigger on something like that. You know, I have a hard enough time hearing Will when we're out wandering around and hunting. I don't need to add an ear pro to that.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And most of the companies are super expensive and it would be really hard for me to swallow that.
Yeah, it's tough.
When I can get a piece of foam and shove it in my ear and it works just as good for hearing wise. But
yeah, it's tough because it is such a huge investment and they custom make them. So it's not like you can just buy a pair, try it out, and return if it doesn't work.
Yeah, if there was the REI model
with
Ear Pro like that, I'd be trying every brand out there. But everyone I've asked who's taken the plunge has sort of lukewarm feelings about it. Mm-hmm. And so it just feels like it's a little too early to jump into that.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of it. Yeah. You know, I don't worry about my ears when I'm big game hunting. We don't pull the trigger that often. Upland hunting, I would love to, but I also need to be able to hear the birds and the dogs. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just, you know, I'll probably regret it in 10 years, but right now I'm okay with it.
What about bad weather gear or backup gear? What do you kind of keep in the truck as an extra?
You don't keep any bad weather gear.
I have a rain suit in the truck.
In the truck.
Rain suit?
Underneath my seat. I like to keep an extra pair of socks and a pair of sandals for when I'm done. I can change out socks and put in my shoes, or just if it's warmer out, I'll just take my socks completely off and just run some sandals.
I carry a puffy coat with me most of the time. 9 times out of 10, I'm irritated that I bothered to carry it, but it's nice to have when you need it. I do keep... I've got a Helly Hansen camouflage head-to-toe raincoat that just sits in the truck. And that's mostly there, frankly, because if I decide I want to go duck hunting, I can throw it on over whatever I've got on. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of my emergency. The weather's getting really bad. But, you know, we don't hunt that far from the truck.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like big game hunting where you've got to carry dedicated bad weather gear. If the weather gets too bad, I turn around, I head back to the truck, and I've got, you know, a change of socks usually, but worst case scenario, I'm going to turn the heater on, drive home barefoot. Like, it's not the end of the world. So yeah, bad weather gear isn't a thing I spend a ton of time thinking about, but that's just the nature of the way that we hunt. We're never more than about 3-4 miles from the truck, it feels like. Mm-hmm. And that's on a big day.
I don't really have anything to add to that. I'm not great in that area. The one time I needed backup boots, I had them in there. That was just a fluke thing. I don't know why I did, but they were there.
But you have extra clothes in your... in your deck system.
I do. I do keep extra clothes in there. I keep
socks and stuff in there. Yes. Emergency things.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. You pull it out and you're like, wow, this is your dresser drawer in your deck system.
Yeah. It is. And there are days that, like, you look outside and you know you're going hunting and you're like, okay, we need to overpack and throw some backup stuff in the truck. And a lot of times there's a sleeping bag in my truck anyway, like, real emergency situation. Mm-hmm. I will plan ahead. But it just, you know, the weather changes pretty quick in Montana, but not that quick.
Right.
At least where we're upland hunting.
Let's do a little bit more of like the hunting gear. So I brought out the chokes. This has been a new thing for me this year. Instead of just using the factory chokes, I bought a set of Briley chokes. This was recommended from a good friend when I started learning more about shotgun patterning. And it was fun, but more interesting to compare chokes of my factory choke and a Briley choke, and just seeing how much more honed in and consistent of a pattern that you get with a better choke.
Saying that, sometimes your factory chokes are going to be great, mm-hmm. and chokes are unnecessary in some points. It's all in knowing what your chokes are and how they shoot is, I think, the most important thing. Sometimes you can have a better choke factory than buying one off the shelf. Chokes can change your shot pattern quite a bit. So even if you do get chokes, or you still have to know what they do and how they work. So patterning what you have is huge. Mm-hmm.
And this has been super handy.
Yeah, that's nice.
Those are nice. So, some sort of tool to quickly swap out your chokes.
Yeah, really and nice. I don't know what it's just the Briley. Yeah. Is it a speed choke?
So it just hooks in and then it has a thing. You can just
can
pull them out really quick.
Super nice.
I'll tell you the thing I really like about your Brileys, but they're not specific to them. Those extended tubes on the chokes are fantastic. My Black Eagle, the factory chokes are all extended because it's a waterfowler's gun.
Yeah.
But something that's easy to swap out with your fingers and not have to have a tool there is really nice in the field too.
Right.
And most of the ones that stick out are labeled. So they're really easy to read. You know, you don't have to look at your dirty choke inside and see what it says on there, or figure out what the notches are on it to know what choke it is. It's really, really easy.
And this is a good time to remember about the choke lube as my last hunt was in the rain. And I guess I didn't pull them out after 2 weeks and there's a little bit of rust on my choke.
Yeah, there are threads in there. So you
got to do that. Got to pull them out, lube them up. What are we doing for shotguns this year? I think people have heard enough about my shotgun experience. So you were just talking. You had what did you have previously?
So the first shotgun I spent real money on was my Benelli Super Black Eagle. I think it's the 3. And that was the first gun I really loved. And I still, that's my waterfowl gun if I'm going out.
Is that a 12-gauge?
Yeah, that one's a 12-gauge. The ability to adjust the drop in the cast as it comes out of the box, it's got some shims, was really nice. That was the first gun I ever shot that it felt like it finally was shooting where I was looking. And then hunting with you guys for a while, you know, I started playing more and more with double guns and I like them a lot, but you know, the nature of double guns is if they don't fit you, they don't shoot real well. And then I discovered that Orvis did a collaboration with FabArm and they made the D2, which you guys have at least one of, and I really liked it a lot. And they upgraded the receiver. The metal is a little bit nicer. It should be a little more robust. They upgraded the wood. They changed a couple of things, like they added a gold inlay on a couple of pieces. But the big thing is with Orvis, you get their guarantee on everything that you buy. So it was much easier for me to stomach the idea of spending that kind of money on a first shotgun that if it didn't fit, no questions asked, they were going to take it back. It wasn't a big deal.
Nice.
And so, you know, and since I bought it, I've done a fair bit of reading about it. It's got a reputation as one of the better guns you can buy for the money right now. You know, in that sub $3,000 category, something you can expect to get a lifetime worth of use out of. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with spending that kind of money if it's something I'm going to hold on to.
Yeah. And that was the issue, was it with your other gun and the ammo last year too, right? You couldn't shoot.
Yeah. The big challenge was last year I bought, and I still love that gun, that little Ithaca side-by-side 20-gauge. And I did end up selling that one. But the problem with that was just those older guns. You can't run steel through them. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of non-tox available. There wasn't steel.
Right.
And so I ended up carrying that Benelli with me all year because up on the res here, you have to run non-tox. And so, you know, the ability to at least stop by a gas station, buy whatever steel they've got, worst case scenario. Granted, we all carry a fair amount of shells with us, but it's been a weird year in that regard. That was huge. So,
but now we know you can shoot Boss through there. You can shoot Boss safely through.
Yeah, I could have shot Boss through that side by side, but at the time we didn't have a lot of that lying around. I think I started to towards the end of the season, but again, I didn't want to rely on having somebody I had to mail order. I wanted to be able to walk into a gas station and pick something up.
Yeah. I think at that point, bismuth and tungsten and stuff was just starting to break out more and more. And like, there's a lot of companies that are making that stuff now. I mean, I think RST used to made them forever for those old guns. And they shoot really well through that, but they're more of a...
You're going to have to go to a sportsman's store to buy that stuff. It's not going to
be I think that's kind of stuff you need to order.
Yeah,
you know, order it.
Yeah, exactly. Especially. There's plenty of great non-tox out there. I've shot a lot of it. The challenge is the stuff that, like, on the spur of the moment, can you run out and grab it? And there just isn't anything out there that isn't steel that, like, the average store is going to carry.
Yeah.
Especially this year.
You got a new shotgun this year?
I did. My very first shotgun I ever really got was a Browning 5.25 Silver and Under. I really liked the gun, but man, I haven't shot that thing all year. I've been shooting it's an actual women's gun, the Siren D2, and man, I haven't been money with that thing. I really like it, but I did get a new shotgun. I've always liked side by sides. I've always, you know, just the aesthetic of it, and they're fun to shoot. So I ended up picked up a CZ because I didn't want to spend a ton of money on a side by side and not like it. But I really enjoy shooting, especially a side by side when I'm grouse hunting.
Is that the CZ Sharp Tail?
That is a
Bob White.
It's a Bob White. Bob White G2. Okay. Yeah, just a plain Jane side by side 28-gauge. And I really like it. It's not balanced.
It has the double trigger.
It's a fun gun to shoot, I should say. It's not balanced really well, but when I point it at something and pull the trigger, it shoots where it needs to shoot, which is important, and it fits me fairly well. I don't have really huge hands, so it's got an English stock on it. So having that holding onto it's really nice, but it swings well. For the majority, I've been shooting the D2.
It's a nice gun. It's similar.
Yeah, I mean, they're very similar. It's just he's shooting that women's fit that's a little bit slightly different, length of pull and drop on it.
The stock's a little bit different.
Yeah.
The comb's a little higher.
Yeah. But yeah, they're essentially the same gun. And we both really like that gun a lot.
New this year that we're using is the bird straps. You actually made this one. You made a couple of them. I've never been really comfortable with taking photos of my birds.
And we, you know, we live in that media age now. And to be honest, it's when I started, I never really took pictures. But now, you know, now you take a little pictures here and there. It's nice to look back and remember those memories or even past dogs that have passed away, and to go back and see that kind of stuff is nice. So, and to be honest, I wish I would have took more pictures when I, from years past. But this just gives it a little, instead of throwing all your birds on tailgate and taking a picture, and just to hook this on a, you know, barbed wire fence and put your dog there and, you know, take a picture of the scenery that you just hunted off of is just seems to be more enjoyable to look at later on.
The birds seem to be more photogenic on those too.
Yeah,
pull them out of the bag.
More normal in the duck blind.
Yeah, for sure. Out,
you know, a bunch of birds. You know, you don't have you don't have a vest with you, so throwing them on a strap around your shoulder and hiking out is big.
Another addition I wanted to just make a quick mention of is just the Boss ammo bags. When you buy a case of Boss shot shells, you get the ammo bag with, and I really, really like these because you don't have to go through the little cardboard boxes, ton of them, and just toss them somewhere where they're just, you know, in your truck or more garbage to add to the, all the things. You can just dump a whole bunch of shells in these nice canvas bags and be on your way.
Yep.
So that's kind of a fun little add. And my husband here, he's so handy with leather and stuff. So you throw a bunch of them in a bag and you don't necessarily know what it is unless you write on it, but he made a cute little tag here. It says 20 gauge, six mags. So
what are the odds that's accurate by the end of the season?
That we have quite
you have enough of the bags.
We have quite a few bags, and I have them all labeled because that was one thing.
Yeah, when we went out last week, it was like, what the hell are we shooting?
Because the labeling on the shelves will wear out and you don't know what they are. So that just comes down to housekeeping, you know, just not leaving shelves in my pouches and not leaving shelves around my truck. Otherwise I'm just going to guess after that point. If I take them out and put them away or remember what I shot and what I was hunting last time I was out is big.
Yeah.
What are some snacks that you guys carry in your vest? Your kind of go-to?
I'm terrible about that, to be totally honest with you. With my food issues, my go-to are the Honey Stinger Energy Chews or their gluten-free Stroop Waffle, whatever the heck it's called. And then if it's going to be a really long day, I'll actually throw like a Pedialyte in the bag instead of just a water bottle for me.
Yeah.
I keep gummy bears, gummy worms. I always usually have a pack of that in my vest at some point. Suckers. I love all kinds of different kinds of suckers when I'm out just to something to suck on. A caramel apple ones are great, or any of the Tootsie Roll ones I love. Or sometimes just a granola bar. Just in there for a snack.
Feels like you mostly eat whatever the kids left in the truck.
Yeah, that too.
The peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah. Those are good too. Throw one of those. What are they?
Uncrustables.
Uncrustables in there.
Yeah, you like those.
Yeah.
I do the suckers too. And jerky. I really like jerky in my vest. It's nice to give to the dogs a little snack too.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move to the truck and dog setups.
Sure.
Jeff, you and I have the deck systems in our truck. So that's kind of been a nice little add of keeping things compartmentalized and in a space.
I, you know, I'm not overly organized in there, but it has cleaned things up quite a bit. You know, you were talking about you'd like to have your chokes somewhere that you can get to them. Like my chokes just for both shotguns live in the deck system. So I know if I get into the field, they're there. I've got a bag of Boss shot shells that's in there all the time. And then the two guns stay in one drawer. And it's been really helpful for the stuff that needs to live in the truck most of the season. It's really nice to have.
I got it because last year I was on a trip to South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And I, if you remember, I had like a platform in my truck, and then I had the just a wood, like plywood. Mm-hmm. And I must have slammed down my brakes at some point because like my stuff that was easy to grab in the back of my truck, my shotgun, my all my shells had moved to the very back of my truck. And so remember, I was at a hotel. It was really cold at night, and I was trying to wiggle my body under that platform, trying to reach my shelves, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't reach my shelves. And so, like, something needs to change here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, having the deck system is nice. Although I keep talking about putting your shotguns back there. I know they just came out with like, those new kind of compartments to set your guns in, because I had an incident. Just like beginning of the season, I had my gun in a silicone case, and you know how those like the separators, mm-hmm. I had it sitting. I always have it sitting right in there because it mm-hmm. sits really nice. I can fit shells and stuff underneath of that. My gun is still in there, but when I went to pull out the deck drawer, my gun nose had tipped up, and so I couldn't open the drawer all the way. And it took us, I mean, we almost just went back home because
it took us a long time.
We were like 45 minutes in there trying to get my gun unstuck from the top, not being able to pull my gun out.
Yeah, we drove up the mountain and something jostled underneath it, ended up tipping it up and
got
locked. You can definitely overfill those and it becomes really hard to open them at some point.
And that brings me, to another point, bringing an extra gun when you go out hunting.
Yeah.
Spare, because something could happen. And if you drive for a trip and your gun gets not working, what do you do? I mean, you can't really do much. Mm-hmm. So I usually carry an extra gun, but I don't have a deck system. I wish I did. After seeing yours and you having one now and having that all organized, you know, I'm just putting it in the back of the truck, and I'm sifting through it all. It's been really nice to have a drawer that pulls out. And it's waterproof. It's dustproof. It's pretty nice.
It's also nice to have that little extra layer of security. I know, being able to lock your tailgate, I tend to think if people really want to steal stuff, there's only so much you can do. Make it a little more difficult on them, but they're going to find a way in. But it is nice to have that extra barrier, especially if you're out traveling. Hunting stuff's expensive. I've had my truck broken into and had a bunch of gear stolen out of it before. Trying to make it just a little more difficult for them is nice to do.
If you make it more difficult, they're going to possibly pass on and go to the next person that doesn't have that.
10 more minutes that I can have to walk up the trail and catch them doing it. So, anything you can do to slow them down, I think it's useful. And so that's really nice about the deck system. And I know you don't have the actual key locks in yours, but I did add those to mine finally. Again, it's one more layer of stuff that they got to deal with.
Right. And we all run a different number of dogs. When you go hunting, you're running one dog. Yep. When I go hunting, I'm taking three with. And when you go, you're taking eight to ten. Yeah. So, and that's why you're pulling an eight dog trailer.
Yeah, I run a trailer. And then the bed of my truck has dogs in it as well. In the back seat, even sometimes if I really go on a longer trip. I don't necessarily like pulling a trailer. Just especially now in the country that we hunt in, it's really hard to get in and out of places, especially this later in the season when it's wet and snowy. It's can be a real hassle. I really care not to, so may want to change that setup up sometime and put a actual trailer topper on top of the truck so I can haul just as many dogs and not have to worry about getting stuck. There's places I've gotten stuck with the trailer, and I know if I would have just had my truck, I wouldn't have been stuck. But there's places where I've been stuck with just my truck too, and there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, you and I had to turn around a couple of times last year going somewhere with the trailer because it's just those roads get muddy and the trailer starts slipping sideways, and you got dogs back there. It's not just random stuff, so you tend to be a little more conservative. Mm-hmm.
I've had to ask farmers to pull me out with the tractor before, so.
I had to pull you out with my truck. Thankfully, we both had a vehicle last year. We went on our on our big trip together.
Luckily, we were together that time, because that would have been a bear to get anybody back there. We
didn't have cell service, and we were nowhere.
We were way back in the boonies.
I don't know anything.
Human life. That.
Will didn't have to come and help me with my tire punctures.
I added the rooftop tent this year. You've had one for a couple.
This is the second year.
Your second year. Yeah. So that's been a nice addition. I was sleeping in the back of my truck for the last couple of years, or when I travel out of state, I would just stay at a hotel. Yeah. But having that rooftop tent has been really, really nice just to be able to get up and go. And it puts me right in the spot I need to be.
That's what I like about it. Yeah. Everything is there and ready to go. I used to have a trailer, but I would not take it along with me for the same reasons Will doesn't like taking his sometimes. Mm-hmm.
That trailer was like rugged though.
Oh yeah. I mean that in terms of off-road capability, that trailer was more capable than my truck probably. But here in Montana, we spend a lot of time going, hey, let's go look at that spot. You just never know what it's going to look like trying to turn it around or exactly. What the roads are going to be like. So it's been really nice to switch that rooftop tent setup. You know, it's not perfect. It's got its downsides. You and I talked about this year when it was really windy on the plains, you feel like your truck's going to blow over.
Yes.
It can be tough to sleep through that. But in general, I think it's the best compromise of all that stuff, especially if I'm out by myself and I don't want to commit to the same base camp every night. If I'm going to do that, then I don't mind having like a teepee tent with a wood stove in it. But yeah, it's really good for that running and gunning. We're just going to go explore a new spot.
Yeah, I really like it. The downfall is, I think of as a couple weeks ago when I went out to Idaho chucker hunting and it was like raining all day.
Yeah.
You go back and you sit in your truck or you sit in your tent, right? Whereas the girl I was with had a camper and we could go in. And
there are people out there that manufacture like diesel heaters that can be hooked up to a rooftop tent. I haven't gone down that road. I'm not a big fan of having to listen to people's diesel generators and stuff like that when I'm out camping. The Mr. Buddy gets a little bit sketchy in a rooftop tent. If it gets knocked over, it makes me a little nervous.
Yeah.
But none of those solutions are perfect.
And I had the Mr. Heater.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is there's no setting of when it gets to this temperature, keep it there. So I got super hot in 20 minutes and it wasn't for me. I got the insulation layer in the tent and that did make a good amount of difference.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you're better off just having a really warm sleeping bag. They're great little systems and they're coming out with new ones every year.
Mm-hmm.
The one that you guys have wasn't even on the market when I bought mine 2 years ago. I'm really curious to play around with that one at some point. But they've all got pros and cons to them. I think the one thing I would tell people who are using them for hunting is to stay away from the ones that you have to unfold and fold back up and require you to like zip the cover shut and things like that. In cold weather, they are a nightmare to deal with because the fabric gets stiff, your fingers start to hurt. You don't want to have to deal with the zipper. We're both running hard shells that fold up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the nice thing about those ones that unfold is you get a lot more space inside if you've got a whole family you want to take camping. But they are really a warm weather product in my mind.
And cargo rack.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using the Leitner cargo rack. You have a topper on your truck.
I do, yeah. I'm running the RSI Smart Cab, which is a company out of South Africa, I believe. And it's a metal topper. You can have it shipped to you and assemble it yourself. It's not hard to do. The big reason I went with that is every other topper company would not warranty it if you were going to put a rooftop tent on.
Oh,
the fiberglass ones are all rated too low to hold a rooftop tent on them.
Okay.
The RSI one, I think, is rated up to 700 pounds static.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 300 pounds if you're actually moving. And so that was huge. They're, you know, up and downsides to it. The cost is about the same to a fiberglass topper. They're not going to color match it, I don't think. Maybe they now offer that. They're a newer company, so they don't have a huge catalog of vehicles that they sell them for. And, you know, the warranty work can take a little while because I get the impression it's one guy sitting in Reno sending out parts.
Mm-hmm.
But if they make it for your truck, they're really interesting. They're big gull wing windows. They're not sliders. You can get into it from either side or the back, which is really nice. And they make a ton of like attachments that go in those gull wings. Like you can have a kitchen that attaches to it to make your coffee in the morning. I'm not that fancy. So, you know, but it works pretty well for me. I also like the little added security of people can't see what's in the back of my truck.
Mm-hmm.
It's a glass window. You can break it and steal stuff if you're motivated. But at least you have to wonder why you're bothering to break the window and take the chance. So
Right.
It's sharp looking too. It, mm-hmm. it looks good. It looks rugged. It is rugged and it looks mm-hmm. rugged, but it's not. It doesn't look like a military vehicle going down the road either.
No, it doesn't. And I actually like the fact it's not color matched. So if you buy another truck, you know, assuming it fits, then you just move it on over. It's just black. Mm-hmm. It fits with everything. It doesn't really matter. So it's been a good fit.
And I opted for the cargo rack instead of the topper because yeah. I do a lot of hauling of stuff. Like yep. I'm running into town. We build a lot of things here. I put plywood in the back. I put garbage cans in the back because our dump, you know, where we have to take garbage is like 2 miles away.
Yeah.
So I like the rack system. The gear pods, you know, I can pack in. They attach right to the system on the side. They keep things weatherproof, dry. Yeah. It's just super handy.
It holds
the tent well. And I can take the kennels in and out yep. easily. And in the winter when we have the elements, I just throw those Mud River
yep.
covers over. And I mean, I pull the Bracco out and he's nice and warm in there.
Yeah. So, I think we're all running those.
Yeah.
And then the Primo's waterproof pads are in yeah, the bottom of the Primo pads are all up. Of our.
If you don't have a dog that eats them, I have a couple wire hairs that prefer to pull those up. But yeah, they're nice.
But damn wire hairs.
Bracco would never do that. Or would a poodle pointer, would they? No.
He's not that motivated.
What's your.
I have a lot of non bed dogs.
You don't get a bed. You don't get a bed. You don't get yep. a bed. You have all wire hairs on your chain currently.
I do.
Trying to get a pointer though.
He keeps threatening. Tried to talk me into it for a while. Like I needed a second dog.
You do need a second dog.
Well, right now it feels like I do.
And Lightyear's coming out with the hydro pod. That's the only thing I noticed that I miss is. You know, when you're out for a multiple day, when you're just taking baby wipes with to shower in, and dry shampoo to be able to get some nice yeah. water. So, like, you just came out with a hydro pod to be able to wash your hair.
I think that's more important for you. I don't mind if I stink for a week.
Usually I'm hunting by myself. Yeah, there's no one to complain about it.
I don't complain about my own smell.
Well, but it's nice. I mean, it'd be nice to rinse the dogs off because my dogs, I mean, especially early season when you've had those gross little, where the drought has been and yeah. they're in that gross stuff, yeah. just to be able to rinse them off at the end of the day before I put them back in their kennel.
Or even if you have an emergency nice. And you need to clean something out or yeah, it's never if you decided you needed to shoot a deer and you want to clean out the cavity, that kind of stuff would be nice.
Yeah. So, yep.
Clean up your birds a little better than just throwing them in. Feathery mess.
What else? Oh, a headlamp. That's kind of a go-to to have in your truck as well. I use that yep. every hunt, every night. Usually yep. I'm getting back, you know, right when the sun sets, cleaning birds.
Yeah.
It's nice to have that.
Or even in your pack, in your vest. Sometimes if you're
going to hunt till dark,
if mm-hmm. you want to stay out just a little too long and you don't realize how far away you really mm-hmm. are from your truck, you may need that to get yourself back.
Another one of my new ads this year was this little gadget. Surprisingly, it's way more handy than I thought it was going to yeah. be. It's just a magnet gun holder. So I put it on the side of my truck and the barrel of my gun sits right in there. So you don't have it laying on the tailgate and you're pulling dogs out. They're not jumping on your gun. Or I used to set it against my tire and you know, a dog or whatever could run by and knock it over. So this is just really nice to have. And I've forgotten to take it off the side of my truck a couple times and it's still
it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, it doesn't go anywhere. It stays right there. So
kind of fairly nice. Cheap. You can find them anywhere between $5 to $10.
For two of them. I think we got a 2-pack.
2 for $10. Yeah. I've seen them for 8, one single ones, but they're pretty handy.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yep. Knives, Jeff. this isn't my area at all. I have a scissors that I yeah. Use to
just the shears.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a knife nerd, so it's a different thing. So when we're talking about knives in the field, I don't do a lot of bird cleaning in the field. I don't know about you guys. If I'm gonna have a knife in the field, I'm still using those Havilon, you know, changeable blades. I can't remember the name of it. They've got one that's larger. Handle thing that can flip open on two sides so you can have two different side blades on it. I'll take that big game hunting because I can put the saw attachment on one of them to split breast blades and stuff like that. But getting home,
I'm always shocked what kind of knives people have. For bird hunting, I think you really need two things. You need a chef's knife or a santoku. If your hands are a little bit smaller, you might want something with a smaller blade. I use a 10-inch chef's knife. That's kind of my go-to. You don't have to spend a ton of money on them, but like every other product, I think if you're going to use it, spend the money to get something that's going to last a really long time for you. A boning knife is really nice for birds. I was shocked that Will didn't know what this was. Boning knife is just a semi-flexible blade. It'll bend a little bit. It's usually 6-7 inches, and it's got some curve to it. If you're not a huge cook at home, the brand that I always tell people to get is this one. It's Victorinox. I think it's the Fibrox line. It's got a textured kind of plastic handle on it. It'll hold an edge pretty well. I think the boning knife is $30. I think the chef's knife is $50. They're pretty cheap. If somebody sticks it in the dishwasher and ruins it, it's not going to, you know, break the bank to replace it. If you do want to spend a little bit more money on them, these are the ones that I use at home. This is a brand called Melio. It's a really small manufacturer. My buddy is actually the guy who designs and manufactures these knives. And instead of what is actually a boning knife, what I like to use is they have a fillet knife that they make that's offset. So it sits down a little bit. It's a little bit longer. And I have a tendency to hold the knife like that when I'm boning birds or deer or anything like that. So it's just really comfortable for me. They're going to be on the more expensive side. I think the fillet knife is about $200. The chef's knife is about $300 from them. But they're a company that really specializes in kitchenware. You know, Victorinox is who started the Swiss Army knife. They're trying to make all kinds of knives out there. This is all they do is they work with chefs. And their specialty is actually really, really high-end custom knives. They'll cost you, you know, $1,200 for your chef's knife if you're a professional chef. This is their production line. The thing I like about them, they're completely U.S. made, start to finish. The steel is from the U.S. Everything is from the U.S. They use the very best stainless steel that's available on the market. The guy's kind of a metallurgy nerd and really likes stuff that is durable, will hold an edge for you forever. And the thing that's kind of weird that nobody notices that I absolutely love about these, they've got hardware in them and the handles are removable, which when you're dealing with dead animals, I want to be able to take that off and really clean underneath it and get all the viscera and stuff of there. Even these ones that you look at and you think, oh, well, the handle is integrated. Stuff gets under there. It's shocking, especially like the really expensive Japanese wood handles. When we've had to repair those in the past, you take them apart and there's just so much gunk under there that makes me uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's not getting into your food, but it's still nice to be able to do.
And it wrecks the wood eventually.
Eventually it will eat it from the inside out for sure. But you can always rehandle a knife. But yeah, that part is really nice too. Mm-hmm. If you're handling dead animals, the ability to pull the handle off and get anything out of there is really, really nice. That's what I think everyone needs if you're going to be dealing with big game or bird animals. You need a boning knife. You need a decent chef's knife.
Okay.
But you don't have to break the bank to do it. You don't have to buy Japanese anymore. Some of the best steel comes out of America now. It's really interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, and that's Melio and Victorinox are the two brands.
Okay. We'll put the link in there too.
Then. Sure.
What about for you? What do you do?
I just run a regular game shear and a fillet knife. I've bought those Rapala fish fillet knives, those really little light ones that I can throw in leather cases.
Come with the leather sheath and everything.
I mean, they don't last forever, but
There's something to be said for that.
They're so cheap that I can just go out and grab another one. And they usually come with a sharpener too, but I've used those for forever.
Yeah.
And we've just recently tried out a couple of Michael Thompson's upland knives.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. We had some at our grouse camp and they're pretty slick.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess you don't really realize how important the steel is until you get a good knife and you understand that edge, how long that lasts.
How long it'll hold it, especially when you're dealing with bones, whether or not it's going to chip on you and things like that. It's weird, though, because the more expensive it gets, theoretically, the more durable it is. And at the same time, you feel the need to baby it because you spent money on it.
Yeah. But
the hedge retention, how easy it is to sharpen, those are things that are really important to me.
Okay.
These ones have been used for deer, an elk, and an antelope so far this year, and I haven't had to really properly resharpen them since.
Nice.
Birds aren't really too difficult to get things apart. When it comes to big game, that's a lot more cutting.
A couple other things in my truck new this year. The puffins. I love these things. drinkware. You know, this is, so this, they make like the sleeping bag for the bottles, and it's just nice. It's just, it's one of those things that makes you happy,
yeah.
Right? Like, you're just happy to throw your beer in there at the end of the day. And I love them. So that I'm going to put that link in the notes too, because these puffin things rock. And actually, Katie Willis, when we were chucker hunting the other weekend, I went over to her setup, and she had her beer sitting in one of these too. So it's made by a small company in Bend, Oregon, and they're adorable, and I love them. And I just bought another one at Shields 2 days ago. Because it matches my jacket.
There you go.
And you have three arms, right? You need three of them?
Yeah.
Four of them, five of them. One of them, two.
It's the little things, you know? GoPro. I'm terrible at that.
As much. You use them more than I do.
I've tried to use them, but I'm not good at it.
You're better than I am. I always forget to turn it on, or I'm turning it off when it happens. It's just, well.
There's supposed to be a voice activation. Yeah. I like the idea of it too. And there's great video out there from other people, definitely not mine, but it's one of those things where, you know, one day I'm going to say, man, I wish I had that hunt on video.
Yeah.
And I do, because I had it with me when I shot my first sage grouse this year, and I didn't have it on. And man, like, that was a bucket list hunt for me. Yeah. And but that memory is instilled here, but it sure would have been nice to have that on video, because it was a super cool hunt.
And so, even going into that, you came back from a hunt and you were filming with the GoPro, and we had some young dogs on the ground, and you're like, I don't know what that dog was doing. Mm. We put it into the computer, and it showed us all that.
Cause you're like, well, did Teeter point the sharp tail you shot? And I go, well, I don't know. I don't remember if she did or not. So we were able to pull it up on here
and go back and
be able to
tell that dog.
Like, yeah, she did. Doing? She did stop. So that's a nice little tool to have along with other tools. Dogs. I have right here next to me. Do you have your comb over there, Jeff? Mm-hmm. Comb. This is in our, do you keep yours in your vest?
Yeah.
You got yours on Amazon.
This is as basic as a comb gets. Mm-hmm. They were like a 2-pack was $9 on Amazon. It's the only comb I can get him to tolerate when we get back to the truck for whatever reason. And my dog's coat is a magnet for whatever is out there. It's always a long ordeal. Everything else seemed to pull on him or just scratch him a little bit. He was always uncomfortable with it. It's really dull bristles, and they're two different widths, and it seems to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's as idiot proof as it gets.
If you own a bearded dog or a coated dog, I mean, these we got at Murdoch's or like a Fleet Farm for 99 cents. They're in the horse aisle. And that takes, you know, takes those burrs out, whatever you might be getting into.
I have one of them, and I also have one like he does, but it's like much smaller. Yeah. So it has two different
sizes. I think this 2-pack comes with two different sizes.
Mm-hmm. More dog items. The hemostat?
Yeah. This is something I always keep in my vest for sure. It's a hemostat to pull out quills or cactus stuff or anything I need to get in there and pull out. Sometimes I'll use it even to pull prickly pears off me, but that will be in my pouch for sure.
Should we hit the dog boots? We carry two different kinds of dog boots. Dog boots aren't an easy thing to put on that stays on. And we actually have you came up with a really clever method, and we have a video. We took a video last year. I think patrons have access to it, or Patreon members do. But if you're going to use the boots, figure out how to get them on to stay on, because they do work well. We hunted an area with lots of prickly pears, and the dogs would just stop. They'd get them in their feet every 10 seconds, it seemed like. And they were miserable, and you're constantly pulling out your hemostat to get it out of their feet. So this was a nice way to just go enjoy the hunt. The dogs got over it, usually like within 5 minutes in.
Yeah. Once they know what's going on, they forget about the boots on. Mm-hmm. And then once you get them acclimated to boots, then they don't seem to mind. They may take a few steps goofy at first, but when they know we're hunting, they're out and running.
And if they just have sore feet in general, if after the first day they're tearing up their feet a little bit, to be able to throw some boots on them, especially for people that only have one or two dogs and they're out on a 5-7 day hunt,
you need to
keep their feet.
Mm-hmm. I used these a lot when I went.
These are the Lewis boots.
These are the Lewis boots. Boots in general. I used them when I went to Arizona because it was a new ground, lots of cactus. But the thing is you're running on rock and sand. It'll eat away your pads of your dogs. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be out there for a period of time, you know, just putting these on is going to preserve your dog in a lot longer.
Do you recommend putting them on the dog before you go out in the field for the first time?
I think it's better when there's game out there. So if you're gonna, if you want to train your dog to get used to these, you have to go out and train with, I think, with birds. Okay. They have to know what they're hunting. If you put these on in the house, they're just their mind is going to be on what's on their feet. It's going to bother them more. So having them on and putting them in a situation that they know what's going on, like the guns are out, you're dressed in hunting gear,
there's a high reward environment,
exactly. Mm-hmm. There's cover out there to go, they're gonna forget about that, and it may take a little bit, but they're usually
makes for good video when they
forget about
walking real.
It's really funny when you put them on there, they just do
step in. It looks like they turn into really pretty Tennessee walking horses. The rec specs, so we have that for eye protection, and we haven't personally used these. We should actually soon. We'll have Dr. Cassandra Bliss on to talk about all the eye injuries that happen during hunting and the amount of dogs that have them that owners don't even know about. But this is important for the dogs going into that thick cover, which is most of the hunting that you do.
Or if you have a dog that doesn't have really great eyes.
Yeah, like entropic or more of a loose eyelid where we call them just seed catcher eyelids. Yeah. That helps keep the seeds out. Even one of my dogs that has a tighter eye, when I did a tailgate check, I always pull down the eyelids and I look, and I did find a seed in the back of his eye. So even on tight lid dogs, they can get those.
Yeah, he lives pretty fuzzy in his face, and so he gets a lot of seeds around it. He doesn't have droopy eyelids, but eventually if it's there all day long, one of them's going to find their way in. I think we've pulled a couple out this year in tailgate checks. And I haven't tried these yet, but everyone I know who does use them swears by them. Everyone I know who doesn't use them thinks they're silly. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of dying to give them a shot with him to see if nothing else, if it makes those tailgate checks a little bit shorter.
Let's put one of those on Gila tomorrow and see.
I mean,
I think you need to introduce those ones to them.
This is something that the dogs, you know, something on their face like that, they're going to go pretty crazy. So when you put them on, they strap on really well and they're really, really hard to get off. So a dog really can't knock it off. So it's looped up through and they get secure. They're really well made. Yeah. So safety and, you know, eye issues. I know some people have had some eye issues and problems in the past and use these, and it just fixes the problem altogether.
Rexpex makes that ear protection as well. We tried that out last year with a dog that had a hematoma. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did you notice that it helped much of a difference to keep his ears together?
There's foam. It keeps it all secured. It's like keeping the wrap on, you know, but it does offer ear protection. It's something, again, you know, if it kind of wonder in years of why your dogs go deaf, you know, it very well could be, you know, I don't know if anybody's done a study, it'd be good to do some research is, you know, just the constant shooting over your dog, you know, it has to have effect. You know, I've been rung by a shotgun before. What do you think the dog, you know, we're shooting towards the dog. I mean, how many times are we ringing those dogs' ears? I don't know. That could be a possibility, but these are out there. Maybe if you're in a duck blind, you're shooting like three or four boxes in a day. I mean, it might not be a bad idea to give your dog a little relief from that shooting.
Next, we have the Garmin GPS system. So Jeff, you're running the Pro 550 Plus right now.
Yeah.
You have the 100.
The Alpha 100.
Yep, and I have the Alpha 200i.
Courtney has the newest gadget, I'm sure.
Well, so here's the thing. Last year, when we hunt together, there's one unit, and only he can control my dog. or only I can control his dog, and we'll link up our watches. But if you're more than, I don't know, 20 yards from each other.
Less than that. We thought maybe the watch would need another handheld. She could just run the watch and know where the dogs are. But if she's too far away, then she's blind out there, which is not fun.
Yeah.
So we did say we're going to get a new unit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you're getting a 200 eye soon.
I love yours. It's everything that I didn't like about the Alpha 100
is fixed
in the 200 eye.
Which is what? Can you be a bit more specific for people that might not?
So let me take this case. So, man, size-wise, the screen's a little bigger. But the thing is with the Alpha, you have your three buttons on the top here, and that's what's controlling your stimulation, vibration, continuous, and that kind of stuff. What they changed, they still have the buttons on top here to work your dog, but what they changed with the 200 is there's a toggle switch here on the side and a menu button, so you don't have to touch the screen. It's still touch screen, but you can easily move it around, and it's not... Like, I would constantly bump this one and change settings, and that doesn't seem to happen with this. This one, it's actually lighter than my 100. It's slimmer than my 100, but the screen is bigger. Another thing they added to the 200i, which they make a 200 as well without this, but the 200i has an in-reach capability, which... We really were planning to get an in-reach anyways, living in the West, just as we hunt in so many areas where there is zero reception in cell phone. So that they integrated that into it as well. Is it necessary to run GPS? No. When I first started, I was running bells and beepers, and that seemed to work just fine. But then they came out with the first Alpha, which I ended up getting. And it was so nice to run silent. I could run completely silent. Did that hinder the birds? It's hard to tell, you know. Everybody was running bells and beepers at that time before GPS came out. So I would say, birds pick up on that kind of stuff. You know, you can tell when you go out pheasant hunting and you slam your door and you see 30 birds fly out of the field. You know, they know you're there. So I have a little benefit you can have.
What about your integration that you use Garmin and Onyx together for GPS options?
Well, the Alpha still, you can actually put a chip in the back, and Onyx sells chips for this. Garmin sells their own chips, but I honestly believe Onyx is a little better because it gives you property boundaries, which is really the important thing you want anyways. You need to know if you're on private or public, which is a bummer, is those chips do not work in the 200i. Not Garmin's fault. You can call Onyx up and talk to them about it, because apparently I'm told that these are capable to use the Onyx chip. It's just Onyx is no longer allowing them to use it. So I don't know if it's a licensing issue or what, but call Onyx and tell them to let them use them in Garmin's, because it's a nice feature to have here, so you don't have to use your phone along with your handheld. And my phone's old and my battery doesn't last long, especially when it's cold. My Onyx is kind of kaput. So I liked having the property boundaries. That's mainly what I used that for anyways, but it does integrate into the Alpha 100s. And hopefully they'll figure out some kind of licensing issue or whatever with the new ones come on, because those chips are kind of nice to have.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff, you have the Pro 550 Plus.
Yeah, I bought mine when I got Gila, and I do think it is a better training controller.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to change the levels. It's got, I think the big difference between the Plus and the straight 550 is it adds that GPS component. It's a really basic, just directional and distance to your dog. But for me, you know, we live in bear country. We hunt in grizzly country a fair amount. So just having a sense of where your dog is was really helpful to me. Mm-hmm. I think now that Gila is coming towards the end of his puppy training and his stimulation is pretty dialed, it's about the same level for everything, I'm probably going to sell that 550 and take the jump into an Alpha.
The thing I like about the Alpha is being able to track how much work the dog did for the day. I like that I know at the end of the day, he did 13.5 miles in the hunt that we just did, because in the off season, it gives me a sense of what I need to do for his conditioning. So I will take that jump at some point, whether or not I do the 200 or the 200 is still sort of up in the air at this point.
I'm a numbers person too. I appreciate that.
It doesn't really matter to me. What I really like the GPS for it, this kind of GPS rather than the 550 pluses, this has a mapping system. I get out, I start a new hunt. I mark my truck in case I just get into birds, and sometimes you lose where you're at, and it's just easy to turn around and go, okay, I have a half an hour daylight left. I got to get back to the truck. What's the fastest route back? Helps me. Being in the West now, I don't get lost as much. When I was in the Midwest, in the Northwoods, everything looks the same. Like, it's very easy to get lost. Here, at least you have mountains and visuals. You can be like, okay, that's north, that's south. And it's easier to get out, I think, than it is in certain parts of the country. But there was many times in the North Woods where I was walking back in the dark and trying to find a road and figuring out where the heck I was. Mm-hmm. But because you just get into so many birds, you just keeps you moving.
Yeah.
But, I do not train with this. I don't think it's a great training collar. It's great hunting collar. This new one here, I think I could train with this and be okay once you get used to it. But I just run a regular 500 training collar. I need that to be really consistent. We need to make those corrections.
And I think we're pretty much all of these, we're all running the TT15 collar. Mm-hmm. Is that?
Yep.
Yeah. That works with all their systems.
Well, Garmin breaks it down into your Alpha line, and then they have a Pro line, and then they have
Is it the Delta?
The Delta line, yeah. So they're all a little different. So those lines are compatible with each other, but they don't integrate with each other. Like my Pro 500, the Pro 500 collars wouldn't work with these. They don't have antennas. They don't have GPS capabilities. But I could take my collars for my Alpha and link them into
anything your collar further downstream.
Yeah, which cool with the Alpha line is I can sync this thing with this, and I can tell where she is at all times. So I know where my hunting partner is right on my unit, and vice versa. You can allow the other person to correct all the dogs, or you can lock them out and go, I don't trust this person correcting my dog, so I'm going to lock them out and they can't correct my dog, but they can tell and track where they are, which is neat. Same thing with the Pro 550 Plus. It'll sync in to that.
And they'll all connect to the watches. That's the other thing.
Yeah the watches. Good point bringing it up. Do you have the watch?
I don't have it on. But I do run it when I'm out hunting. Mm-hmm. If I don't think I'm going to need to correct him much, it's way easier to look down at your watch than to pull your controller out.
It is. Yeah. But you're talking about like how this just kind of will dangle, and that's how I wear it, but I could easily just put it in my vest and not have it either. If my dog doesn't need any stimulation or corrections or anything, because you can just link it to get the Garmin watch. There's Instinct and there's the Phoenix. So you get more options with the Phoenix watch than you do with the Instinct, but that's a really nice addition to the whole system, and not having to constantly pick this up. I like to have my hand on my gun, and then, if I'm holding it, if I get, it vibrates when your dog goes on point. So that's super cool. You can vibrate, and then you could be in more ready position, and then just do a quick flip of your wrist and see exactly where that, what location your dog is at, and have a better idea where the bird's going to get up. Mm-hmm. So the Stakeout. I bring mine on all of my trips because I take multiple dogs with. You have multiple dogs. Whether you're just, traveling, you want to stop and not have to leash walk 8 to 10 dogs at a time. You can just put that Stakeout in the ground and dogs can potty on there and then do a quick cleanup through the area.
Especially if you're hunting with other parties and other dogs, it's just, exactly where your dogs are. Instead of letting them run all over and mess with other people's stuff. And, sometimes you get bring some puppies out. I need to put them on that line. I don't need them running over to my partner's truck and grabbing his gloves and carrying them out in the field. when I run, I have two five dog strings, and I'll just throw them all out and just.
It's a nice way to unwind at the end of the day, yeah, too. Put them out there while you're cleaning your bird, having a beer, and you don't have to put your dog up in the kennel. You know, they've had a long day. They can, you know, lay out and stretch too. So.
Yeah. And your hunting partners don't have to listen to you yell at your dog to come back constantly, yeah, and things like that. It's just nice to have them dialed, yeah, in. And one of the things that, you know, I have a really cheap tie-out stake that we've been talking about, you know, young dogs sometimes don't do great in a duck blind.
Mm-hmm.
I have a kennel that is collapsible that I put in the duck blind, and the dog will go in there. But if it's a slow day, he gets frustrated and tries to sneak out of it. Mm-hmm. You can throw the tie-out stake there, clip him to it, and make sure he can't get anywhere from there. And then you can go over there and deliberately let him go when you're ready for him to go,
mm-hmm,
without worrying about him running around and busting birds and things like that.
Mm-hmm. More so of a training plan, especially, yep, when the duck hunting, you can hook him up to that stake,
yep,
and you can shoot, and the dog's not going to take off.
Yep.
Or if you have a jerk of a dog, right? You don't need it running around picking fights with other dogs.
We don't know any dogs.
And
like that.
And or getting into trouble. I mean, you know, I was out with a girl last year hunting, and her dog ran off and got into some, you know, a dead deer, sure, and then it was puking its guts out all through the night in her vehicle, mm, in its crate. So, you know, have your dog on a stakeout. It's not going to go find trouble. Eat dead animals. Supplements. I take, speaking of puking their guts out and or diarrhea, I take Fortiflora with me all the time. It's a probiotic Purina mix, and it now comes in a chewable. So that's really nice, because at the end of the day, when I'm putting it, the powder in all the dogs' bowls after a hunt for their dinner, sometimes that powder, if it's, you know, windy afternoon or night, powder will just blow away as you're dumping it. So, and especially when you have several dogs, just to be able to throw that tab in their food is nice. And this helps with stress, and it keeps their stool nice and firm, because you don't want to wake up the next morning and have a diarrhea-filled crate. So that's awesome.
Other dog gear. I don't think we have any examples up here now, but like a chest plate. Sometimes the older dogs, especially if you have some breeding dogs where they're mammary glands get a little bigger. I mean, that can be really rough on them. And it's just another piece of protection to preserve the dog's ability to hunt longer and more days. Another thing I used to use a lot when I was in the Midwest, and I don't use it as much anymore because the cover is so much different, but I called it the Superman cape. It was just like a blaze orange high vis. It just put on the back of the collar and went along the back and around the belly, because, you know, even running GPS, you can see the dog. I know the dog's on point, but where is the dog? It's so deep in the, it's just an easier ability to spot them.
I also have dog food storage on the list.
Ooh.
Because when you travel, you don't want to take a 37.5-pound bag of food with you, or your Vitalvolt that you might have it in at home. So
I bring a big bag because I bring so many dogs.
You do. But you also have a large dog trailer where you can fit large bags of dog food in.
And just grab a 30 some pound bag of food and bring it with me.
Yeah. But this is just a nice little travel bag that'll last several days. And then we also have Mud River ones.
Mud River makes a great, mm-hmm, makes a good bag. They're waterproof. They're lined. You fill it up and they roll up and snap. They're really nice.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
It makes a handle too when you roll it and snap it together.
Yeah, snap it together. It'll keep them organized,
mm-hmm,
and not from tipping over and spilling all over the place and wasting a bunch of food.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, you do more waterfowl hunting. Is there anything else to add to this?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is I don't run a chest plate in the upland field, but I do like to run a vest on the dog when we're waterfowl hunting. Keeps them a little bit warmer. We do a lot of hunting out of like pack rafts or, you know, just normal floats down the river. And I like his vest a lot. He's running, I think it's called a Versa Vest or a Versa Max. I'll find it and give you the link to it.
Okay.
Super adjustable. That was the big thing. We had tried a bunch of like sized options last year and none of them fit him quite right. You definitely don't want a dog like in moving water with a vest with any kind of open space on it, because if they get stuck on a stick, they're not going anywhere. I liked it a lot because it was super adjustable.
one of the things they do is you can swap the panels out. Like you can buy the camo one is what it came with, but there's a blaze orange one where you can just swap out all the side panels. Oh, nice. And it'll function sort of like that cape that he okay. was talking about. It's got a handle on the back with heavy paracord so that I can pick the dog up and lift him into the raft if need be, moving water. Mm-hmm. That's really helpful. Other than that, I really do like that collapsible dog kennel that's lightweight. If you're not moving far from the truck, it's nice to give the dog a blind that he can climb in. He can sit still, feel good about it. He can still see what's going on and not worry about his movement, especially with a young dog flaring birds everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to know what you would like to have for next year out of what you have now, maybe whether it be in addition to your gear or maybe something better of what you have currently.
For me, it's just more of an organization kind of thing, but you know, seeing your guys' deck systems was huge, just to put stuff in there like that, and also to possibly get something that mounts on the back of my truck instead of pulling a trailer that mm-hmm. allows me to take as many dogs as I normally do would be helpful for me, so I don't have to rely on farmers in the area to pull me and my trailer out. Trailer's great in certain times, but you know, this time of year, you know, when we're getting ice and snow and mucky, muddy, feel it can get kind of sketchy, especially if you're out by yourself.
You know, one of the things I like about upland is I feel like I'm more or less dialed in big game hunting. There's always some god awful expensive thing I want to spend money on. I will switch from that Pro 550 to the Alpha by next season for sure. I think the other thing is I'd like to try one of the iCamper tents like you guys have and just mm-hmm. see if I like that a little bit better than mine. But that's honestly about it. You know, now that I've got a shotgun that I love and everything feels pretty dialed in at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a lot to go upland hunting as much as we've covered 12,000 pieces of gear today.
That's very true. Very true. What I would like next year, I didn't have this year, is I noticed that when I'm taking several days off going by myself in remote areas, no electricity, is to have some kind of a solar panel, solar mm-hmm. charger for my stuff, because I actually had to cut a couple hunts short, you know, whether it was to go turn my truck on and let that run for an hour so all my stuff could charge, or to just be done because my e-collars are going to stop working. My phone, which contains my Onyx system, is going to stop working. So I really need to figure out a way where I can stay out there 3 to 5 days in the middle of nowhere without having to run my truck, which I'm going to have to eventually go back in town to find a town for gas. So yeah, that's important to figure out moving forward. What about game changers? What is something that you had this year or recently, or maybe piece of gear that has really been a game changer for you?
Oh, my socks. Having those switching from regular old Hanes socks to an actual performance merino wool sock has been huge. My feet have been way more comfortable and healthy, and just makes me more comfortable when I'm out hunting, and helps me stay out there longer.
Mm-hmm.
It's been huge for me.
What about you, Jeff?
I have the really silly thing, which is when I get back to the truck, I don't care if it's big game hunting, I don't care if it's upland, I want to take my damn boots off. And I've fallen in love with these like quilted slippers. These are Teva Re-Embers. There's a bunch of brands. Amazon's got a bunch of them. They're great. You can either slip them on or you can put them in four-wheel drive mode.
Oh, man.
And if you have to like go to the bar to meet a friend for a drink after your hunt or whatever, it's far more presentable than the Crocs that I was running for 5 or 6 years before that. And they're so warm and comfortable. It's amazing.
They look like it's like quilted, like a big blanket for your
they're
feet.
They're so comfortable. It's absurd. So that is the weirdest thing, but
I love it.
That was the biggest addition to my kit this year. And I've got two pairs. So one of them lives in the truck just in case I forget them. That's in the deck system all the time.
Yeah. That's awesome. My game changer. Well, I suppose maybe two, like last year was adding the Garmin watch. That was a big game changer for me.
Yeah.
This year was probably the iCamper, just to be able to not have to stay at a grungy hotel, which is maybe 30 to 60 minutes away from an ideal hunting location, or sleeping in my truck, which, you know, you want to be able to get a good night's sleep and you're already sore from walking all day long anyway. So being able to stay longer where I'm at and walk out, I should say, crawl down the ladder and go down to the hunting spot right where I am the next morning is super nice.
So. Yeah, and if you decide you don't want to hunt that spot, the ability to pack it up really quick compared to a normal ground tent is really, really nice.
Good point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you're not on the cold ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you stay warmer in those.
And I do feel a little bit more safe from bears when I'm up there.
It's good that you feel that way.
I do. So, all right. Well, thank you, guys. This was a lengthy one, but we covered all the things, so I appreciate it.
We go hunt tomorrow?
Yeah, let's go hunt tomorrow.
If you have any questions, feedback, or like to share some necessary pieces of gear that we may have missed in this episode, shoot me a DM or email me. I'd love to hear from you. Connect with today's guest, Jeff Quigley, on Instagram at Quigley Hunts to follow him and his poodle pointer Gila in all of their hunting adventures. Check out the partners and sponsors of this podcast for all of your bird dog needs. Purina Pro Plan, Boss Shot Shells, Onyx Maps, Siren Shotguns, and Dakota 283 Kennels. And please be sure to support the conservation organizations of the birds you're chasing after this season and the public lands in which you hunt. I hope to see you tomorrow night at the Game Bird Plucking Demo. Grab a beer and a bird and join us at patreon.com/thebirddogbabe.